of existence was extinguished, never to have the chance to grow, though one of them might have been a superior way. The kind of single rule the Imperial Order represented was slavery. Kalin was surprised to encounter Galean sentries farther from their camp than before. They were no longer spread too far apart, and they were well hidden, popping up with drawn bows and bared steel when she was almost upon them. Chendalin, Brendan, and Tossadin had obviously been at work. The sentries put fists to hearts when they recognized her. The dawn was turning the sky to a dark steel gray. It was warmer than it had been, with the clouds covering the land like a warming quilt. She was dead tired in the saddle as Nick plodded through the snow toward the camp, but as she came into sight of men rushing about, she came alert with the thoughts of what needed to be done. Chendalin, Brendan, Captain Ryan, and Lieutenant Hobson were speaking with a group of men when they saw her riding toward the camp. The four came at a run to meet her at the edge of the activity. Men were cooking, eating, stowing gear, preparing weapons, and tending to wagons and horses. She spotted Tossadin, in his white wolf mantle, off some distance with Lieutenant Sloan, waving his arms in explanation as he talked to men who stood mute, with their spears all standing upright in the snow, the tight mob of them looking like a dark porcupine against the white ground. Kalin let out a weary moan as she dismounted before the four men who had come to greet her. Other men all around kept to their tasks, but moved more slowly as they watched her with great interest. The four before her stared openly with wide eyes. None said a word. "What are you all staring at?" she said, a little short-tempered. "Mother Confessor," Captain Ryan said. "You're covered in blood. Are you hurt?" Kalin stared down at the white wolf fur of her mantle. Only it was no longer white. She realized for the first time that the skin of her face was tight with dried blood, her hair stiff with it. "Oh," she said, in a quieter tone, "it's all right, I'm fine." Chendalin and Prindon sighed with relief. Lieutenant Hobson, still wide-eyed, swallowed. "What of the wizard? Did you see him?" She lifted an eyebrow to him. "What you see on me is what's left of him." Chendalin appraised her with a sly smile. "And how many others did you kill?" Kalin gave a tired shrug. "I was awfully busy, I didn't take the time to count. But all things considered, I would guess, including the fires, well over 100. The wizard is dead, that's what matters. Two of their commanders are dead also, and at least two more are wounded." Captain Ryan and Lieutenant Hobson paled. Chendalin's proud grin widened. "I am surprised you left any for others to kill, Mother Confessor." She didn't return his smile. "There are plenty left." Kalin rubbed her horse's nose. "Nick did most of the work." "I told you he wouldn't let you down, Mother Confessor," Hobson said. "That he did not. He was better aid than the good spirits. He kept me alive this day." Kalin lowered herself to one knee in the snow before the two Galean officers. She bowed her head. "I find I must beseech your forgiveness." She took a hand of each in hers. "Though you are ignorant of how to accomplish what must be done, you have put your duty to the Midlands before my orders. That was courage of the highest order. I want you all to know I was wrong. You acted of noble intent." She kissed each hand. "I laud your righteous hearts. You have kept in mind your duty above all else. I beg you, forgive me." There was silence as she knelt on one knee. At last, Captain Ryan whispered down to her, "Mother Confessor, please get up. Everyone's watching." "Not until you forgive me. I want everyone to know you did the right thing." "But you didn't realize what we were doing or why. You had only our safety in mind." Kalin waited, and he was silent in embarrassment a moment longer. "All right, I forgive you. Don't do it again." She came to her feet, releasing their hands and giving them a small, humorless smile. "See that? That is the last time you ever disobey me." Captain Ryan nodded in earnest. "I will." He shook his head. I won't. We will do as you command, Mother Confessor." "I understand what you mean, Captain." She let out a tired sigh. "We have a lot of work to do before we attack those men."
"We?" Chendalin shouted. "We were only to teach them some things, and then we are to be on our way to Aidendrill. We cannot become caught up in this battle. You have already taken enough chances. We must—" Kalin interrupted him.
I must talk to you three. Bring Tossett in. Captain, please collect the men, including the sentries. I want to speak to you all together. Please wait with your men. I will be with you shortly. And leave a tent up for me. I need a few hours' sleep while things are being prepared. She walked off a ways out of earshot of the camp with Chandelin in tow as Prindon went to get Tossadin. When they were all together, she turned to them. Chandelin was scowling. The other two waited without emotion.
The mud people, she began in a soft tone, have magic.
We have no magic, Chandelin argued.
Yes, you do. You do not think of it as magic because you were born with it, and it is the only way you know. You do not know of other peoples, of their ways. The mud people can speak with their ancestors' spirits. They can do this because they have magic. You think this is simply the way things work, but they do not work so in other places with other people. Your ability to do these things is magic. Magic is not some strange and powerful force. It's simply the way some people, some creatures are.
Others can speak with their ancestors if they wish, Chandelin said.
A few can, but most cannot. To them it's speaking with the dead, and that is magic, frightening magic. You and I know it is not to be feared. But you will never convince others that what you do is good. They will always think it evil. People believe as they were raised, and they were raised to believe that talking to the dead is evil.
But our ancestors' spirits help us, Prindon said. They never bring harm. They only bring help.
Kalin laid a hand on his shoulder as she looked to his worried eyes.
I know. That's why I help to keep others away from you, so you may live as you wish. There are a few other people who talk with their ancestors as you do, and they too had this magic. There are other peoples and other creatures that have magic different from you, but just as important to them as yours is to you.
She looked to each. Do you understand?
Yes, Mother Confessor, Tossadin said.
Prindon nodded his agreement. Chandelin grunted and folded his arms. The important thing, though, is not if you believe what you have can be called magic. The important thing is for you to understand that others believe what you do is magic. Many fear magic. They think you are evil because you practice this magic. Kalin pointed in the direction of the army of the Imperial Order.
Those men, the ones we chase, the ones who killed all the people back at that city, they are joined in a cause. They wish to rule all the people of the Midlands. They do not want any to live as they wish, but to bow to their rule.
Why would they wish to rule the mud people? Prindon asked.
We have nothing they would want. We stay to our lands.
Chandelin unfolded his arms and spoke softly.
They fear magic, and they wish us to stop speaking with our ancestors.
Kalin squeezed his shoulder.
That's right. But more than that, they think it's their duty, to the spirits they worship, to kill you all. They are on a mission to destroy all who have magic because they think magic is evil. They believe people like you have magic.
She met Chandelin's eyes.
If they are not killed to a man, like the Jacopo, sooner or later they will come and destroy the mud people, just as they destroyed the city of Ebenezia.
The three men studied the ground in thought. She waited for them to weigh her words. Chandelin at last spoke.
And they would kill the other people, those who wish not to have outsiders come to them to live alone, like the mud people?
They would. I spoke with the men of that army. They are like crazy men. They sound as if they have been visited by evil spirits, like the Bontoc did. Like the Jacopo, they will not listen to reason. They think we are the ones who listen to evil spirits. They will do as they promise. You saw the city they destroyed and the size of the army defending it. It is not an empty threat. I must get to Adendrill so I can raise an army to fight these men. The counselor should already be doing that, but I must get there to make sure the extent of the threat is known, to make sure all of the Midlands joins together in this. But there are no forces at hand to fight these men now, except these boys. There are cities that will be destroyed before help can arrive. Worse, the threat these men pose will convince some to join with them. Some see honor as an inconvenience and will side with the army they think will win. This will swell their ranks further. Before Adendrill can send troops to find and defeat these men, many will die. We must call upon these boys to join the fight now, before more innocent people are slaughtered. These boys volunteered to become fighters like you to protect their people, the people of all the Midlands. We must help them in this. We must not let this army of evil men escape to wander the Midlands, killing and destroying and winning more to their side. We must begin the battle with these boys, help them, show them, to make sure they will know how to fight, and to know they will continue without us to lead them. We must lead them into the first battle, to give them confidence in the ways we teach them, before we can be on our way to Aidendrill.
Chandelin gave her a level look. And you will call the lightning to help us?
No, Kaelin whispered. I tried last night, but it didn't come. It's difficult to explain to you, but I believe that because I invoke this special magic on behalf of Richard, it will not work except to protect him. I'm sorry.
Chandelin unfolded his arms. Then how did you kill so many?
Kaelin patted his arm where the bone knife was. The same way as your grandfather taught your father and he you. I did not do as they expected. I did not fight their way.
The two brothers leaned in intently as she spoke. They like to drink, and when they're drunk, they don't think so well. And they are slow.
Tossadin pointed behind with a thumb.
These men, too, like to have drink at night. They have a wagon of it among their supplies. We would not let them have any. Some were angry. They said it was their right.
Kaelin shook her head. These boys also thought it would be right to march right up to an enemy who outnumbers them 10-1 and have a battle in broad daylight. We must help them in this. We must teach them what to do.
They do not like to listen.
Prindon glanced back over his shoulder at the men he had been trying to teach. They wish always to argue. They say, this is the way it is done, and we must do it so. They are filled only with the way they were taught and do not like to be told another way.
Yet that's what we must do, Kaelin said. We must lead them in the way that will work. That's why I need you three. I need you to help me in this, or many people, including eventually the Mud People, will die. I need your help in this. I must lead them into battle.
Chandelin stood mute and unmoving. The two brothers pushed snow with their feet, considering. Prindon finally looked up.
We will help. My brother and I will do as you ask.
Thank you, Prindon, but it's not you who must decide. Chandelin must be the one who agrees. It is for him to decide.
The two brothers took sidelong glances at him as he stood glaring at her. At last, he let out an exasperated breath.
You are a stubborn woman. You are so stubborn you will get killed if we three are not there to bring some reason to your head. We go with you to kill these evil men.
Kaelin sighed with relief. Thank you, Chandelin. She bent and took up a handful of snow, using it to scrub the dried blood from her face. Now I must go and tell these boys what they must do. She shook the snow from her hands when she had finished with her face. Did you three get any sleep last night?
Some, Chandelin said.
Good. After I speak with them, I need to get a few hours sleep. You can begin showing them how to travel without their wagons. We must teach them to be strong like you.
We will begin the killing tonight?
Chandelin gave a grim nod.
Tonight.
Chapter 40. Kaelin climbed atop a wagon before the assembled men. They stood in brown wool coats, packed tightly together before her in the gray morning light. Captain Ryan, with his two lieutenants flanking him, stood at the front of the men. He leaned an arm on the wagon wheel, waiting. Kaelin looked out at all the young faces.
Boys. She was about to ask boys to die. But what choice did she have?
Dear mother, she wondered, is this the reason you chose Wyborn as my father? To teach me what I am about to do?
I'm afraid I have only one bit of good news for you, she began in a quiet voice that carried through the cold air, out over the faces, all watching her. And so I will give you that first, to give you courage for the other things I have to tell you.
Kaelin took a deep breath.
Your queen was not killed in Ebenezia, nor did the men who attacked the city find or capture her. Either she was away when the attack came, or she escaped. Queen Cirilla lives.
The boys seemed to take a deep breath, as if hoping she wouldn't add anything more, and then they erupted in wild cheering. They threw their arms in the air, shaking their fists at the sky. They yelled and hooted with joy and relief. Kaelin stood in her blood-soaked wolf mantle. her hands at her sides, letting them have their time of celebration and hope. Some of the boys, forgetting for the moment that they were soldiers, hugged each other. She watched tears of happiness run down many a cheek as men leapt and shouted. Kaylin stood feeling small and insignificant as the mob of boys poured out their adoration for her half-sister. She couldn't bring herself to halt their rejoicing. At last Captain Ryan climbed up onto the wagon next to her. He held his arms up, calling for silence.
All right, hold it down. Stop acting like a bunch of children in front of the mother confessor. Show her what men you be.
The cheering finally died out, to be replaced by grins and bright eyes. Captain Ryan clasped his hands together and cast her a somewhat sheepish look before taking a couple of steps away atop the wagon to give her room. The people of Ebenicia, she went on, in the same quiet tone, were not so fortunate. The winter silence became brittle. Light breezes rustled icy branches on the trees, ascending the slopes to either side of the flat valley pass holding their camp. The grins withered. Every one of you, at the least, had friends who were murdered there. Many of you had loved ones, family, who died at the hands of the men a few hours up this pass. Kaylin cleared her throat and swallowed as her eyes found the ground. I, too, knew people who died there. Her eyes came up. Last night, I went to their camp to discover who they were, and if they could be called upon to return to their homelands. They have no intention of doing anything but conquering all the lands and putting them under their rule. They have vowed to kill everyone who refuses to join them. Ebenicia refused. The boys shouted and shook their fists. They themselves, they said, would bring an end to the threat. She spoke over their words, bringing them to silence as she did so. The men who slaughtered your countrymen and countrywomen are called the Imperial Order. They fight on behalf of no country or land. They fight to conquer all lands and to rule all lands. They answer to no government, to no king, to no lord, to no council. They believe themselves to be the fountain of law. They are made up of mostly Daharan men, but others have joined them. I saw among them Keltons. Waves of angry whispers swept back through the crowd. Kaylin let it go on for a moment. I saw also among them men from other lands. And I saw Galeans. This time, shocked and angry voices called out that it wasn't true, and said she was wrong. I saw them with my own eyes. They fell once more to silence. She quieted her tone. I wish that it were not true, but I saw them. Men of many lands have joined with them. More men will join with them if they believe they can be part of the victory, part of the new law, if they believe they can be in on the plunder and awarded positions of authority and power. The city of Celion lies hardly more than a hand of days ahead. The Imperial Order will have their surrender and allegiance, or their death. Other cities, towns, villages, and farms will suffer these men if they are not stopped. Eventually, all will come under their sword. I am going to Aidendrill to marshal the forces of the Midlands against the Imperial Order, but that will take time. In that time, their numbers will swell with those who would think to be on the side of might. Right now there is no one able to stop these men from killing everyone in their path who resists them, except you. Kaylin stiffened her back as she let what she had said sink in, and in preparation for what she was going to tell them next. She let the silence settle once more over the valley. As the Mother Confessor of the Midlands, and absent the luxury of conferring with the Central Council, I have had to do that which no Mother Confessor for 1,000 years or more has had to do. On my authority alone, I have committed the Midlands to war. The army of the Imperial Order is to be killed to a man. No negotiation or compromise will be offered by the Midlands. Under no circumstances will the Order's surrender be accepted. I have given an oath on behalf of the Midlands that no quarter shall be granted. Astonished faces stared at her. Whether I live or die, this decree is irrevocable. Any land or people who willingly join with the Imperial Order cast their lot under the shadow of this edict. It is not in the name of Galea that I call upon you to fight. In the office of the Mother Confessor, I call upon you to fight for the Midlands. For it is not Galea that is under threat, but all lands and all free people. There was confident grumbling that they were up to the task. Some in the ranks called out their assurance that they were the men to do it, that they were in the right and would triumph. Kalin nodded to them all.
You think so? I want each of you to look to the faces around you.
They mostly stared at her.
Do as I say. Look to the faces around you. Look to your comrades.
A little confused, they began looking around, twisting to see those to the sides and those behind, smiling and laughing among themselves as if it were a game. When they seemed to have finished with the task, she went on.
A few of you will remember the faces you have looked upon today. Remember and grieve. The rest, if you take up this battle, will not be around to remember. They will die in the struggle.
In the cold silence, Kalin heard the distant chatter of a squirrel, and then the sound of that, too, died away. The smiles were all gone as she finally spoke again.
These men, the Imperial Order, are led by and are mostly Daharan troops. Daharan soldiers are trained from the time they are half your age. They fight internal conflicts in their land, put down riots and rebellions. They do not simply practice battle tactics. They live them day in and day out. They know only a life of fighting. They have been exposed to it in every form. I have taken the confessions of many Daharans. Most do not know the meaning of peace. Since spring, when Darkin Rall sent them against the Midlands, they have been at what they do best, war. They have fought in battle after battle. All who have come before them have fallen. They relish fighting. They delight in it. They are as close to fearless as men come. They hold contests, often lethal, to win the right to be in the van of battle, to win the right to be the first to strike a blow at the enemy, to win the right to be the first to fall.
She surveyed the young faces.
You have confidence in your training, your battle tactics?
The faces nodded, looking to one another, smiling their knowing confidence. Kalin pointed to one, a sergeant by the look of his coat's braids.
Tell me then, you are now in the field of battle, having chased down these men, and here comes an enemy, back at you. You are in charge of the pikes and archers. Here they come, thousands of them, yelling, running, coming to rend your force in two, to break your army's back. You see they have heavy spears, called by them Argons, with long, thin barbs. If they pierce you, they are nearly impossible to remove. They cause ghastly wounds that are almost always fatal. Here they come, with their Argons, thousands of men. What is your tactic?
The young man held his chin out, knowingly.
First, form a tight rank of the pikes formed into a box or wedge to protect the archers. The pikemen face the pikes out, and overlapping the shields, present the enemy with a tight, impenetrable wall. The shields protect the pikemen, who protect the archers. The archers take them down before they can get close enough to use their Argons. The few who do fall on the pikes. Their drive is repelled, and in all likelihood, they have lost a good many men in the failed attempt, making another less likely.
Kalin nodded, as if impressed.
Well stated.
He beamed. The men around him grinned with pride in their knowledge of their business.
I have seen some of the most experienced armies of the Midlands use those very same tactics when the Daharans first came over, last spring, when the boundary went down.
Well, there you have it,
the man said.
They lose their charge against the archers and on the point of our pikes.
She gave him a small smile. The Daharan van, those men I told you about, the biggest, the fiercest, the ones who won the right to be the first at you? Well, they've developed special tactics of their own, for use against your plans. First of all, they have arrow shields, so as they run in, they're protected from the brunt of the archer's work. And I guess I forgot to tell you one other thing about those Argons of theirs. These spears have iron-sheathed shafts for most of their length, and a unique purpose. As the enemy is charging in, mostly unaffected by your archers, they heave their Argons at you.
We have shields,
the man pointed out.
Their Argons expended, they will be on the point of our pikes.
She folded her arms, nodding to him. The van, the men who won the right to be the first wave are big men. I doubt the smallest has arms less than twice the average of yours. The Argons are needle sharp. Thrown by those powerful arms, they penetrate and stick in your shields.
the long barbs prevent them from being withdrawn. The confident smiles were fading as she looked from face to face as she went on. You now have argon stuck solidly in your shields. You drop your pikes, drawing swords to hack the heavy spears away. But the shafts are covered in iron and don't yield. The spears are heavy, and the butts drag the ground. Daharans can run almost as fast as their spears fly. As they reach you now, they jump on the shafts of the spears stuck in your shields, dragging them to the ground, leaving you on your knees and naked to their heavy axes. Arms still folded, she leaned toward them. I have seen men split from scalp to navel by those axes. Men glanced sideways at one another, their confidence shaken. She nodded mockingly as she unfolded her arms. I am not giving you conjecture. I have seen a Daharan force take down an experienced army nearly 10 times their size in just this fashion. In the space of an hour, the battle turned from a rout of the Daharans to a rout of their foes. A Daharan charge of the Argon is almost as devastating as a classic cavalry charge, except they have far greater numbers than any cavalry. And their own cavalry is anything but typical. You don't even want to know about them. They lost half their number in the slaughter of Ebenezer, and they are in camp now, singing and drinking. Would you, if you lost every other one of you, be of good cheer? I know you believe you can win a battle against a force 10 times your size, and I know also that such a thing can be done. But it is those experienced Daharan troops who, on a battlefield, fighting by the tactics of common war, could bring about such a feat. Please believe me, I mean no disrespect to your bravery. But in the field of war, you are not their equal. Not yet. You could not defeat an army half their size were the battle fought the way your enemy would fight. That does not mean you cannot win. It means only that you must do it in another way. I believe you can win, and I'm going to tell you what you must do, and lead you in the first strikes to start you in this. The Imperial Army is not invincible. They can be defeated. From this day forward, I shall never again call you boys. From this day forward, you are men. You think of yourselves as soldiers of your homeland, Galia, but you are not. In this you are not. You are soldiers, men of the Midlands. For it is not just Galia who will be conquered, but all of the Midlands, if these men are not stopped. I call upon you to stop them. The tightly packed crowd of soldiers, tempered by what they had heard, shouted that they would do the job. She watched from under her eyebrows as they confidently pledged to fight to the end. There were angry whispers from some in the crowd, to her right. Men were jostling each other and arguing. Some men wanted to speak, and others were seeking to prevent it. If you should choose to join in this battle, you will follow orders without question, she said. But for this time only, you may speak your mind freely, without retribution. If you have something to say, then let all hear it now, or else hold it to your grave. One man pulled his arm free of another. He glowered up at her. We're men. We don't follow women into battle. Kaelin blinked at him. You follow Queen Cirilla? She is our queen. We fight on her behalf. She doesn't lead us in battle. That's left to men to do. Kaelin narrowed her eyes. What is your name? He glanced around at his fellows, and then held his chin up. I'm William Mosel, and we've been trained by Prince Harold himself. And I, Kaelin said, was trained by his father, King Wyborn. King Wyborn was my father, too. I am half-sister to Queen Cirilla and Prince Harold. There were astonished murmurs throughout the crowd. Without taking her eyes from Mosel, she lifted a hand to silence them. But that does not count for command. You are soldiers. Your duty is to follow the orders of your commanders, and they the Queen, and she must follow commands of the Central Council of the Midlands. The Council of the Midlands follows the orders of the Mother Confessor. For now I fill that office. My family name is, like your Queen's, Amnell, but I'm of Confessor blood first and last. I am the Mother Confessor of the Midlands, and as such, if I say you're to march into a lake, then it's your duty to march until you're breathing water and seeing fishes. Does that make it clear enough for you, soldier? A few other men were shoving at Mosel, urging him to go on with their grievances.
It means you can order us, but it doesn't mean you know what you're doing.
Kalin let out a sigh and pulled some blood-stiffened hair back, hooking it behind an ear.
I don't have the time today to tell you of all the training I've had, or of all the fighting against impossible odds I've been through, or the men I've had to kill in that fighting. I would tell you only that last night I went alone to the camp of the Imperial Order to save your life. The men of the Order, Daharans, fear the things of the night, spirits, and for protection from that, and to assist them, they had a wizard in their company. Had you, in your confidence of battle knowledge, tried to attack those men, that wizard would have known what you were doing and probably used magic to kill you all.
Mosul's defiant expression didn't diminish, but some of the others broke into worried whispers. Fighting against steel was one thing, fighting against magic, quite another. Captain Ryan stepped forward.
The Mother Confessor killed a wizard, he said with pride.
There were relieved sighs among the men. If it hadn't been for her experience, we would have marched to our deaths without even having the chance to lay steel to steel. I, for one, intend to follow those I've sworn my life to serve. My land, my queen, the Midlands, and the Mother Confessor. We're going to stop this threat against the Midlands, and we're going to do it by following those we are sworn to follow. We go into battle under the command of the Mother Confessor.
I'm a soldier of the Galleon army.
Mosul seemed only to get more defiant.
Not a soldier in any Midlands army. I fight for Galleon, not to protect lands like Kelton.
Kalin watched as other men shouted their agreement.
This army, the Imperial Order, or whatever they call themselves, is marching toward the border. Selyan is a border city, and most of it's on the other side of the river, in Kelton. Most of its citizens are Keltish. Why should we die for the Keltons?
Men in the crowd were starting to argue with one another. Captain Ryan's face was red.
Mosul, you're a disgrace to...
Kalin held a hand out to silence him.
No, Soldier Mosul is only speaking as he believes, as I asked him to.
You men must understand me. I'm not ordering you to do this. I'm asking you to fight for the lives of innocent people of the Midlands. Tens of thousands of your fellow soldiers have already died in this battle. I would not ask you to lay down your lives for something you do not believe in. Most who go into this war will die. It's your decision to stay or not. You are not commanded to stay. But if you choose to stay, it will be under my command. I want no man with us who does not believe in what we do. Decide now if you will be with us or not. If not, then you are free to go because you will be of no help to your comrades. Her voice turned as cold as the thin morning air. If you decide to go with me into this war, then you will follow the orders of your superiors. In the Midlands, there is no one to outrank me. You will follow my orders without question, or your punishment will be unsparing. Too much is at stake to have to suffer men who can't follow orders. If I say you will do something, then you will do it, even if you know it's to cost you your life, because it's to save many more lives. I give no orders without sound reason, but I won't always have time to explain them. Your duty is to trust in your superiors and do as you're told. She held out a finger and swept it slowly over their heads.
Choose then, with us or not, but choose this day for all time.
Kalin drew her hands back inside her warm fur mantle and waited in silence while men discussed and argued among themselves. Tempers flared, and angry oaths were given. Men gathered around Mosul, and others moved away from him.
"I'm leaving, then!"
Mosul called out to the others. He thrust his fist in the air.
"I'll follow no woman into battle, no matter who she is! Who's leaving with me?"
About 60 or 70 men gathered about cheered their support for him.
"Go, then," Kalin commanded. "Before you become caught up in a battle you do not believe in."
Having made their choice, Mosul and the men with him cast their glares of contempt. He swaggered forward.
"We'll leave as soon as we can get our things together. We'll not be rushed out on your word."
The men in the crowd pushed in. Before it came to blows, Kalin held her hand up.
"Stop. Let them be. They've made their choice. Let them get their things and be gone."
Mosul turned and pushed his way back through the throng, his new men in tow. As they left the gathered soldiers, Kalin carefully counted their numbers. 67. 67. Who would leave? She looked out at all the faces. Any more? Do any more wish to leave? No one moved a muscle. Then do all of you wish to join in this fight? A united cheer went up. So be it. I wish I did not have to call upon you men to do this, but there is no one else to ask. My heart weeps for those of you who will die. Know that none of those who live will ever forget the sacrifice you made for them and the people of the Midlands. From the corner of her eye, she watched the 67 men moving among the wagons, taking the supplies they thought they would need. And now, to what must be done? Slowly, she shook her head. You men must understand what it is I call upon you to do. It is no glorious battle as you think, where you move like pieces on a game board. No tactics to outwit an opponent in a grand engagement. We will not face them in the field of battle, but kill them in every other way.
But Mother Confessor, someone near the front timidly called out, it's the code of honor for soldiers to face one another in battle, to best him in a fair fight.
There is nothing fair about having to fight in war. The only fair thing would be to live in peace. The purpose of war is singular, to kill. You must all understand this, for it's central to your survival. There is no honor in killing, no matter the method. Dead is dead. Killing your enemy in war is done to protect the lives of those for whom you fight. Their lives are no better protected by killing your enemy sword to sword than by slaying him while he sleeps, but only put at risk by it. There is no glory in this task. It's an onerous deed. We do not intend to give them a chance to engage in pitched battle to see who is the better at the game. Our chore is simply to kill them. If you have difficulty seeing the right of this, then I call upon you to consider the honor of the soldiers you are up against. Consider them as they stood waiting in gangs to rape your mothers and sisters. Consider what your mothers and sisters in Ebenezia thought of honor as they were tortured and raped and slaughtered. The chill of her words sent visible shudders through the stone-silent men. Kalin had to restrain herself from bringing any more horror to their eyes, but before her still floated the vision of the young women in the palace. If the enemy is looking the other way, so much the better, because they will not thrust a knife into you. If it is from a distance with an arrow, so much the better, because they will not have a chance to impale you with an argon. If it is while they have food in their mouths, so much the better, because they will not be able to raise an alarm. If it is while they are sleeping, so much the better, because they will not have a chance to cleave you with their sword. Last night my horse crushed the head of one of the Daharan commanders. There was no glory in that, no honor, only the knowledge that perhaps the deed will prevent some of you from dying by his hand and wits. In that my heart sings with joy, joy that maybe it has saved some of your precious lives. What we do is done to save the lives of men and women yet alive and yet unborn. You saw what was done to the people in Ebenezia. Remember the faces of those dead. Remember the way they died and the horror they suffered before they did. Remember those soldiers captured and beheaded. It is up to us to prevent that from happening to any more people. To do that, we must kill these men. There is no glory in the doing, only survival. In the back, two men gestured obscenely to those around them and walked off to join with Mosul's men. 69. But the rest stood in firm resolution to take up the fight. The time had come. She had dissuaded them from their raw thoughts of glorious battle and told them of the true nature of their task. She had brought most to an understanding of the larger temper of the battle ahead. She had told them some of what must be done. She had brought them to a more focused understanding of their importance in the scheme of this struggle. The time had come to charge them irreversibly to the burden, to forge them into an instrument of retribution that could annihilate the threat. Kalin opened her arms to the men before her, her blood-soaked mantle hanging limp. I am dead, she called to the gray sky. Frowning, they all leaned in a little. What has happened to my countrymen, my countrywomen, my fathers, sons, mothers, and daughters has slain me. The agony of their slaughter has mortally wounded my heart. Her arms spread wider as her voice rose in wrath. Only vengeance can restore me.
Only victory can return my life to me.
She gazed into all the wide eyes staring back.
I am the Mother Confessor of the Midlands. I am your mothers, your sisters, your daughters yet unborn. I call upon you to die with me and live again only by avenging me.
Kaelin swept a hand out.
Those of you who join with me in this are dead with me. Our lives can be returned only through vengeance. As long as one of our enemy lives, we are dead. We have no life to lose in this battle, for our lives are already lost, here, today, now. Only when every one of the destroyers of Ebenicia is slain may we live once again. Until then, we have no life.
She looked out at the solemn faces of the men gathered before her, watching, waiting for her next words. On a warm breeze, the bloody wolf fur rustled against her cheek. Kaelin pulled free her knife and held it up in her fist for all to see. She laid the weapon over her heart.
An oath, then, to the good people of Ebenicia, who are now with the spirits, and to the good people of the Midlands.
Almost all the men followed her example, holding their knives over their hearts. Seven did not, but, grumbling curses, rose to join with Mosul. 76.
Vengeance without mercy before our lives are returned to us, she pledged.
The sober voice of every man before her repeated the oath, joining with every other in unflinching unity.
Vengeance without mercy before our lives are returned to us,
the roar of their words drifted away on the morning air. Kaelin watched William Mosul cast a glance over his shoulder at her before following his men away, back up the pass. She returned her attention to those before her.
You are all sworn in oath, then. Tonight, we begin the killing of the men of the Order. Let it be without quarter. We take no prisoners.
No cheer went up this time. The men listened in grim attention. We must no longer travel as you have been with wagons to carry your needs and supplies. We must take only what we can carry. We need to be able to travel the woods, the small passes, so we can outmaneuver the men we hunt. I intend to sweep in at them from all directions and at will, like wolves at hunt. And like wolves, who hunt with coordination, we will control and direct them as wolves control and direct their prey. You are men of this land. You know the woods and mountains around us. You have hunted them since you were children. We will use your knowledge. The enemy is in strange territory and keeps to the wide passes with their wagons in great numbers. We will no longer be impeded as they. We will move through the country around them, as do the wolves. You must divide up what you have in the wagons and place what you can carry in your packs. Leave the heavy armor. It takes too much effort to carry, and we are not going to fight that way. Take only light armor you can wear at a forced march. Take what food you can. You are to take no liquor or ale. When you have avenged the people of Ebenicia, you may drink all you want. Until then, you will not. I want everyone alert at all times. We do not ever relax until our enemy is dead to a man. Some of the food that's left is to be packed into a few of the smaller wagons, without any arms or armor. We will need volunteers to give it to the enemy. The men mumbled in surprise and confusion. The road divides ahead. When they are past the fork and on their way to Celion, the wagons with the food and all the ale are to take the other road, and then the smaller routes to get ahead of them. You will lie in wait with these wagons until their advance guard nears, and then cross their path so they can see you. When their forward column spots you and gives chase, you are to abandon the wagons and escape. Let them have the food and drink. The Imperial Order is nearly out of ale, and tonight they will celebrate their luck. I expect they will get drunk. I want them to be drunk when we attack them.
The men cheered with that news.
Know this. We're as a wolf pack, trying to bring down a bull. Though we are not strong enough to do it with one dispatching strike, we will harry him to exhaustion, drag him to the ground and kill him. This will not be a single battle, but a constant nipping at his hide, taking small chunks of him at a time, wounding, weakening, and bleeding him all the while, until finally we have the advantage and can kill the beast. Tonight, under cover of darkness, we will slip into their camp and make a quick strike. This is to be a disciplined action, not random killing.
We will have a list of objectives. Our aim is to weaken the bull. I have already partially blinded him by eliminating the wizard. The sentries and lookouts will be taken first. We will dress as many men as we can in their clothes. Those men will go into their camp and locate our targets. Our first need is to slow their ability to counterattack. I don't want us run down by cavalry. We need to bring ruin to their horses. There's no need to waste time killing them. Breaking their legs is sufficient. We need to destroy their food. We're an army small enough to be able to get food by hunting, foraging, and buying from surrounding farms and villages, but one that size requires much. If we destroy their food, they will be weakened. We need to kill their arrow makers and fletchers, bowyers, and blacksmiths, all the craftsmen who can make and repair bows, arrows, and other weapons. They will have sacks of goose wings for fletching arrows. They must be stolen or burned. Every arrow not made is one that can't kill us. Bow staves need to be destroyed. Wreck their bugles, if you find them, and the buglers. This will help take away their voices and coordination. Their lances, pikes, and argons will be stacked upright together. 5 seconds and a few swings with an axe or sword will destroy a great many. Heavy axes or hammers will at least bend the argons and render them useless. Every lance or spear broken is one that can't kill you. We want to burn their tents, to expose them to the cold, burn their wagons so they will lose supplies of every kind. Of most importance are their officers. I would rather kill one officer tonight than 1,000 men. If we can kill their officers, it will make them dull and slow, and it will be easier to take this bull to the ground. If any of you can think of anything else that will weaken them, bring the ideas to me or Captain Ryan or to the other officers. The object tonight is not primarily to kill soldiers. There are too many. Our object is to disable them, make them weak, slow, to make them less sure of themselves. Most of all, our object is to put fear into their minds. These men aren't used to being afraid. When men are afraid, they make mistakes. Those mistakes allow us to kill them. I intend to terrify them. Later, I will tell you how.
You have a few hours to get everything ready, and then we start moving. I want the sentries at double distance. Beyond them, I want lookouts, and I want scouts to keep in contact with the order. I want to know where they are at all times. I want constant reports. I don't want to be surprised by anything. I want to know of anything that you see or encounter, no matter how innocent it seems. If a rabbit jumps too high, I want to know about it. Just as we intend to trick them, I don't want them tricking us. Take nothing for granted. May the good spirits be with you. Now get started. The men all began moving, the air coming to life with the sound of feet and talking. One of the two lieutenants stood near, unbuttoning his coat, giving orders to some men around him. Lieutenant Sloan, he looked up as the men he had instructed went to their tasks. See to the sentries and lookouts at once. I want any of your men who know how to make white paint or whitewash to assemble the supplies they need. We will need large tubs of some sort. I want rocks heated to warm the insides of tents. He didn't question her strange instructions.
Yes, Mother Confessor.
See that the small wagons with the ale and food are prepared, but hold them until I give the order to let them go. He put his fist to his heart without comment and marched off to see to it. Kaylin's legs felt as if they would give out at any second. She was so tired from having had no sleep and from riding the better part of the night, to say nothing of the work she had done in the heart-pounding fright, that she could hardly focus her eyes anymore. Her shoulder hurt where the lance had been couched when it was shattered. The muscles in her leg jittered with the effort of keeping her standing. She was also mentally exhausted. Anxiety over not only the enormity of her decision to take it upon herself to call all the Midlands into war, but also over her impassioned plea for these men to lay down their lives on her word, eroded her strength further. Despite the unusual warmth of the day, she shivered inside her fur mantle. Captain Ryan stepped over to her. Chandelin, Prindon, and Tossadin were standing by the rear of the wagon watching. Captain Ryan gave her a sly smile.
I like it.
He jumped down and held his hand out for her. She ignored the hand and jumped down as he had done, and by luck, more than anything, stayed on her feet. She could not accept his offer of help, not now, not with what she was about to do. And now, Captain, I must give you an order you are not going to like. She looked to his blue eyes. I want you to send men after Mosul and those who went with him.
send enough to be sure to accomplish the deed. Deed? They must be killed. Send a force with instructions that they are to pretend to join with Mosul's men, so they don't scatter when your men approach. Send your cavalry behind, but out of sight in case they're able to take to the woods. When they are surrounded, kill them. There are 76. Count the bodies to make sure they are all dead. I will be very displeased if even one escapes. His eyes were wide. But, Mother Confessor, I take no pleasure in this, Captain. You have your orders. She turned to the three mud people. Prindon, go with the men he picks. Make sure those who departed are killed to a man. Prindon gave her a grim nod. He understood the unpleasant necessity of what she was doing. Captain Ryan tensed in near panic. Mother Confessor, I know those men. They've been with us a long time. You said they were free to go. We can't. She laid a hand on his arm. He suddenly recognized the threat that represented. I am doing what I must do to save your lives. You have given your word to follow orders. She leaned a little closer. Do not add yourself to those 76. He at last gave a nod, and she removed her hand. His eyes told it all. Hate radiated from him.
I didn't know the killing was to start with our own men, he whispered.
It does not. It starts with the enemy. Captain Ryan pointed angrily up the pass.
They're going in the opposite direction of the order.
And did you think they would go to the enemy in plain sight of you? They intend to circle around. She turned and started off toward a tent that had been left up for her. Captain Ryan, trailed by Chandelin, Prindon, and Tossadin, followed her, unwilling to concede.
If you were so concerned, why did you let them go? Why didn't you let the men kill them when they would have?
Because I had to give all those who would renounce us and abandon their fellows the chance to do so.
What makes you think all the traitors departed? There could be spies or assassins among us.
Yes, there could be. But I have no evidence of that at the moment. If I find there are, I will have to deal with them then.
Kalin came to a stop before the tent. If you think I may be making a mistake about those men, I assure you I am not. But even if I were, it is a price that must be paid. If we let them go and even one of them betrays us, we could all be killed in a trap tonight. If we die, there will be none to stop the order for a long time. How many thousands would die then, Captain? If those men are innocent, I'll have made a terrible mistake and 76 innocent men will die. If I'm right, I will be saving the lives of untold thousands of innocent people. You have your orders. Carry them out.
Captain Ryan shook with rage.
I hope you don't expect me to ever forgive you for this.
No, I don't. I expect only that you follow my orders. I don't care if you hate me, Captain. I care only that you live to do so.
He gritted his teeth in mute frustration. Kalin gripped the tent flap.
Captain, I'm so tired I can hardly stand. I need to get a couple of hours sleep. I want a guard posted around this tent while I rest.
He glared at her.
And how can you be sure one of them might not be the enemy? They could kill you in your sleep.
That's a possibility. But if that happens, one of these three men would avenge my murder.
Captain Ryan flinched and glanced at the three mud people. In his anger, he had forgotten they were there.
Chandelin lifted an eyebrow to him. I will first put sticks in his eyes, to hold them open, to be sure he sees what I do.
Lieutenant Hobson rushed up, holding a bowl out in his hands.
Mother Confessor, I brought you some stew. I thought you would like something to eat, something hot.
Kalin forced herself to smile at him.
Thank you, Lieutenant, but I'm so tired I'm afraid I wouldn't be able to keep it down. Could you keep it warm until after I've rested?
Of course, Mother Confessor.
Captain Ryan's glare slid to his grinning lieutenant.
I have a job for you, Hobson.
2 hours, Kalin said, and then wake me. You should all have enough to keep you busy in the meantime. She pulled the flap aside and went into the tent, nearly collapsing onto the cot. She drew a blanket over her legs and lifted the fur mantle over her head, shutting out the light. In her small, private darkness, she shook. She would have given her life right then to have Richard hold her for just 5 minutes.
Chapter 41. She was kissing Richard, holding him tightly in her arms, her mind filled with no thought but peace and joy, when she started at the sound of shouting. Richard was gone. Her heavy arms were empty. She sat up, pushing the blanket away, frantic for an instant, not knowing where she was, and then she remembered. She felt as if she might vomit. She wished she could have a hot bath. She couldn't remember her last bath. She rubbed her eyes as Captain Ryan stuck his head inside the tent.
"How long?" Kaelin mumbled. "How long have I slept?"
She threw the blanket aside. "A couple hours, just about. There is someone out here for you." Directly outside her tent waited a group of men, an ashen-faced Lieutenant Hobson among them. In their midst stood Mosel, bound and gagged, and held at each arm by soldiers. His eyes darted about in panic. He tried to shout through the gag, but couldn't make himself understood. Kaelin glowered over at Captain Ryan. He stood with one thumb hooked in his belt. "I thought, Mother Confessor, that you would want to execute this man yourself, since he seems to have personally offended you so." He held his knife out toward her, handle first. Kaelin ignored the knife and turned instead to the man holding Mosel. "Release him and stand away." She felt as if she were still asleep, still in a dream. But she wasn't. There was no option. As they stepped back, she reached out and snatched Mosel by his arm. He froze in fright for an instant, and then tried to back away. But he had no time to escape. She was touching him now. He was hers. Her sleepiness vanished in a sucking rush as her power ignited. She gave no thought to what she was about to do. There was no choice. She was committed. She gave herself over to it. The sounds of the camp, the jangle of tack, the grating of wooden boxes being skidded across wagon beds, the splintering of other boxes being pried open, the squeak of wheels, the whinnies of horses, the sound of thousands of feet shuffling, men talking, the clop of hooves, the sound of steel being sharpened, the popping of wood in fires, and the sound of her own heart beating, all faded away to silence. In the silence of her mind, the power was all. She could feel Mosel's muscles tighten under her hand. But he had no chance. He was hers. In the silence, in the quiet, in the peace of her mind, as she had done countless times before, she released her power, her magic, into the man before her. There was a violent jolt to the air as it slammed into him. Thunder without sound. The snow around her and Mosel billowed away in a ring, rising and tumbling, until it dissipated and settled again. Mosel, no more who he had been, dropped to his knees in the wet snow before her. His brow wrinkled with panic that, because of the gag, he would not be able to ask her to command him. He sucked air through his nose, trying to breathe with the terror that he might displease her. The camp around her had fallen into stunned silence, with her the heart of all attention. Kaelin pulled the gag from his mouth. Tears of relief flooded from his eyes.
"Mistress!"
he whispered hoarsely.
"Please, mistress, command me. Please tell me what I can do to serve you."
In trepidation, hundreds of stunned faces around her watched. Kaelin gazed down at the man on his knees before her. She wore her confessor's face. "It would please me, William, if you would tell me the truth of what you planned to do after you left this camp." He beamed with joy, more tears running down his cheeks, and would have clutched at her legs in gratitude had his arms not been bound behind his back.
"Oh, yes, mistress. Please let me tell you."
"Tell me, then." It all came babbling out in a rush.
"I was going to the camp of those other men, the Imperial Order, you call them, and I was going to ask to join them. I was going to take all my men with me so they could join, too. I was going to tell them of the presence of the Galleon recruits and of your plans so they would be pleased with us and would let us join with them. I thought they had a better chance than you, and I didn't want to die, so I was going to join with them. I thought they would be pleased if I brought the men to add to their ranks. I thought they would be pleased with us if we could help them crush you."
He burst suddenly into sobs.
"Oh, please, mistress, I'm so sorry I thought to do you harm. I wanted them to kill you. Oh, please, mistress, I'm so sorry I intended you harm. Please, mistress, tell me how I can gain your forgiveness. I will do anything. Please command me and it will be done. Please, mistress, what do you wish of me?"
"I wish for you to die," she whispered in the icy silence. "Right now." William Mosel crumpled forward against her boots and thrashed in racking convulsions. After a few long agonizing seconds, he was still, his last breath rattling from his lungs. Kaelin's gaze slid over a wide-eyed Captain Ryan to Prindon, standing behind a still ashen Lieutenant Hobson. Chandelin was glaring at him, too. She spoke in his tongue.
Prindon, I told you to make sure they were all killed. Why did you not do as I said?
He shrugged self-consciously.
They were of a mind to do this. Captain Ryan told them to kill the others, but to bring this one to you. I did not know this when we left, or I would have told you. They had 200 men on foot and another 100 on horses. As I told you, they were of a mind to do this, and I did not think I would be able to prevent it, except by killing him myself, and then I realized they might kill me for doing it, and then I would not be able to be near you to protect you. Besides that, I knew you were right, and I thought it would do them good to learn a lesson.
Did any escape?
No. I was a little surprised at how well they did the job. They are good men. They did a hard thing, a thing they wept to do, but they did it well. None escaped them.
Kalin let out a long breath.
I understand, Prindon. You were right to do as you did.
She cast a sideways glance at Chandelin. Chandelin will be satisfied, too.
It was an order.
Prindon gave her a tight smile of relief. Her glare slid to Captain Ryan.
Satisfied?
He stood stiff, pale and wide-eyed.
Yes, Mother Confessor.
She swept a glance over the gathered men. Is everyone satisfied now? There came from them all an uncoordinated mumbled chorus of, Yes, Mother Confessor. If there had been some before who were not terrified of her, there were none now who were not. The lot of them looked as if were a twig to snap unexpectedly. They would bolt for the hills like frightened rabbits. This was probably the first time most had seen magic, and it wasn't wonderful, beautiful magic, but daunting, ugly magic.
Mother Confessor,
Captain Ryan whispered. His arm was still held out, frozen, the knife he had offered her still in his hand.
What are you going to do to me for disobeying your orders?
She looked to his bloodless face. Nothing. This is your first day of being men in the war against the Order. Most of you didn't believe in the importance of what I had commanded. You have not fought in war before and did not understand the need. I will be satisfied that you have learned something from this, and leave it at that.
Captain Ryan swallowed.
Thank you, Mother Confessor. With a shaking hand, he slid his knife back in its sheath.
I grew up with him. He lifted the hand toward the body at her feet. We lived about a mile apart on the same road. We used to go hunting and fishing together all the time. We helped each other with chores. We always went to feast day in our best coats of the same color.
I'm sorry, Bradley. There is nothing to ease the pain of betrayal or loss except time. As I told you, war is not fair. Were it not for the men of the Order making war, perhaps you would be fishing today with your friend. Blame the Order and avenge him, too, with all the rest.
He nodded.
Mother Confessor, what would you have done if you were wrong? What would you have done if Mosul wasn't going to the enemy?
She regarded him until his gaze rose to meet hers. I probably would have taken that knife you offered and killed you.
She turned from his hollow expression and put a hand on the shoulder of the man next to him. Lieutenant Hobson, I know you had a difficult task. Prindon tells me you did it well. He looked near tears, but still managed to stiffen his back with pride. She noticed that his beard hadn't even started to grow in earnest yet.
Thank you, Mother Confessor.
She looked around at the hundreds of men standing about watching. I believe you all have work? As if they had just awakened, everyone began moving again, slowly at first, and then with accelerating urgency. Hobson gave a salute of his fist to his heart and turned to other business. The men who had brought Mosul lifted his body and carried it off. Others went to Chandelin and the two brothers asking for instructions. Captain Ryan stood alone with her, watching as everyone went about their work. Her legs felt limp and slack, like bowstrings left out in the rain all night. For a confessor to use her power when she was rested and alert was taxing. To use it when she was already tired was perilously exhausting. She could hardly keep herself upright. She had been dead tired from riding all night to the enemy camp and back, to say nothing of the fight with them. She needed more sleep than she had gotten, and using her power had cost her even the benefit of the short nap, and then some. She had used what strength she had left to do something that should have been done without her. She thought maybe it must be the cold, and traveling in such difficult conditions, but she seemed more tired than usual lately. Maybe she could ask Prindon to make her some more tea.
Could I speak with you for a moment, Mother Confessor? Captain Ryan asked.
Kalin nodded.
What is it, Captain?
He pushed his unbuttoned wool coat open, shoving his hands into his back pockets. He glanced away to watch some men filling water skins.
I just want to say that I'm sorry. I was wrong.
It's all right, Bradley. He was your friend. It's difficult to believe ill of a friend. I understand.
No, that's not it. My father always told me that a man had to admit his mistakes before he could do right in this world.
He shuffled his feet and looked around, finally bringing his blue eyes to her.
The mistake I made was believing that you wanted Mosul killed because he wouldn't follow you. I thought you were being spiteful because he didn't want to follow you. I made a mistake and I'm sorry. Sorry I thought that of you. You were trying to protect us, even though you knew we would hate you for it.
Well, I don't hate you. I hope you don't hate me. I'm honored to follow you into battle. I hope that someday I'm half as wise as you and have the guts you do to use that wisdom.
She released a quiet sigh.
I'm hardly older than you, yet you make me feel like an old woman. I'm relieved, you understand. It's a small pleasure in all this pain. You're a fine officer and will do right by this world.
He smiled.
I'm glad we're on good terms again.
A man approached and was waved forward by the captain.
What is it, Sergeant Frost?
Sergeant Frost gave a salute of his fist to his heart.
We sent a few men out, and in an abandoned barn they found some crushed chalk and other things needed to make whitewash. We have some wooden tubs we can mix it in. You said you wanted it in something big. They're big enough to bathe in.
How many of these tubs do you have? Kalin asked.
A dozen, Mother Confessor.
Put the tubs near each other and pitch a tent around each. Use the largest tents you have, even if it is the command tents. Make the whitewash with hot water, and place the heated stones inside the tents to keep it as warm as possible inside. Let me know when all this is seen to. Keeping his obvious questions to himself, the sergeant saluted and rushed off to see it done. Captain Ryan gave her a curious frown.
What do you want with whitewash?
We've just gotten back on good terms. Let's not spoil it for a bit. I'll tell you after things are prepared.
Are the wagons ready?
Should be.
Then I must see to them.
Did you send the sentries and lookouts?
First thing.
As she walked through the camp to the wagons, men came to her constantly.
The wagon wheels, Mother Confessor. As we destroy things, we should stave in the wheels.
And? Their battle standard. Shouldn't we burn them so they can't rally their men around them?
And?
Couldn't we set fire to their baggage so if the weather turns colder, they'll freeze?
And?
If we were to throw manure in their barrels of drinking water, they would have to waste time melting snow.
And 100 other ideas, from the absurd to the worthwhile.
She listened to each with attention, giving her honest opinion, and in a few cases, her orders to see it done. Lieutenant Hobson came at a trot, holding out a tin bowl. That was the last thing she needed.
Mother Confessor, I kept some stew hot for you.
Beaming, he handed her the bowl as she walked. She tried to act grateful. He walked along next to her, watching, grinning. She forced herself to take a spoonful.